From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's ass on Hunch of Andy
and Corey Clark.
What's up, everybody? It is Wake Up War Chant. It is presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill in Tallahassee, Florida. Coming up on today's show, five-star Irish O'Fell talking big picture takeaways from Link Jarrett's introductory press conference and the WarChant.com preseason top 40, which now enters the top 20. We've also got Tom Lang. Since it's Tuesday, he's also talking Link and football and top 40. It's all here on Wake Up War Chant, which is always presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill in Tallahassee, Florida. Check out the website, cptallybar.com. Place your order online. Go pick it up. Head home. But wait, no. Place your order online and then saddle up, everybody, because it's Tuesday. It's not only Tuesdays with Tom. It's also trivia night at Corner Pocket. So play trivia over at Corner Pocket. It's a great time. Again, cptallybar.com is the website. The show today, a little bit of a two-parter. Sat down and spoke with Tom Lang. Sat down and spoke with Irish O'Fell. Ira goes first. Seniority, five-star. Managing editor, you know how it goes, everybody. And then Tom as well talks the stories of the day and the top 40 as the gentlemen have dived into the top 20 now. Jeff, Gene, Ira, and Tom. Video should be coming up shortly. Corey Clark's still with the program, but up in Chicago, being a good pop, being a good boyfriend. Corey will rejoin us on Friday. So we'll do a Renegade Express to shut down the week. Last show of this week will be on Friday. We'll do one more. It'll be the Friday show, everybody, unless something breaks, which actually it might today. Now that I think about it, there is something on the horizon. Will it warrant an entire show? Who knows? Stay tuned. Anyhow, I'm going to stop talking. Irish O'Fell and I talking about Link Jarrett's press conference, what stood out. Some cool stuff in there, too. Some insight, big picture about Florida State athletics now being led by Michael Alford, what it means, the vision. I think you'll like it. It's towards the end of the interview. As always, timestamps in the item description. So here's Ira, and then it'll be followed up with Tom, and then that'll be a wrap for us. But enjoy, everybody. Have a great Tuesday. There he is, everybody. It's Ira Schofield, managing editor of WarChant.com, the ultimate Seminole sports source. It's all one word, right? Ira Schofield on Twitter, two Fs, E-L, Schofield.
That's it, man. That's it. Unless they want to say something mean, then there's four Fs.
Ew. All right, Ira, well, let's force a football. That's why we brought you on here, Mr. Five-Star Eagle Eye, also on Monday at the press conference for Link, which we'll talk about later on here. But you, Tom, Gene, and Jeff, you'll hear from Tom later on here in the program, everybody, went ahead and knocked out 20 through 25. We're not going to reveal the master list, but we will talk about where you guys have them, in particular on yours. So 25, you got Renardo Green. I think that might be one of the more ambitious projections for our guy. But then again, I think we say with a fair amount of confidence he exited spring as the starting cornerback opposite Amari Cooper. So why not put him at 25, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of – it's funny, you know, going into this top 40, I thought because there's a lot more talent – you know, there's a lot more talent in this roster, I think, overall. You may have lost – so the top line guy, obviously Jermaine Johnson, and your top rushing back, running back, Jayshon Corbin. But across the board, there, I think this is a deeper team. So you'd think that maybe that would make it easier. But I really think it made it harder to do this top 40 because you're trying to figure out, okay, who's going to win these jobs? And so I think Renardo Green, if he doesn't win a starting job, I think he's going to be in the top rotation of those cornerbacks. So it could be, you know, maybe Jarian Jones wins it. Maybe he wins it. Maybe Azaria Thomas comes in as a freshman phenom and wins it. But even if he doesn't win the starting job, I think the fact that he's fourth year in the program, and the fact that, you know, they seem to be investing so much time and effort at him in the spring and now he's healthy, I just think he's going to be a big part of the defense.
All right. Pokey at 24. I've got Pokey a little bit higher up on my list just because I think he'll probably be the second leading receiver. I don't know if I don't want to spoil your entire list, but you're looking at it that way. I mean, I'm looking at it like, all right, with Pokey, I'm like, all right, he's probably your second leading receiver. Where would you put the number two wide receiver on a top 40 list for your team? But I guess it also depends on how your offense looks. We just think of what, like year five, super senior, Pokey time to get it done, or is 24 kind of like, all right, we know what he is, and then that's what we'll see from him?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We actually, you know, Gene and Jeff and Tom and I did a video for the number 15 to 20 that people can find at War Chant TV, and he's in there on that list. And I'm kind of defending him a little bit. I think even though I had him at 24, I do think there's some variables that could make him more productive than he's been. I mean, on the one hand, I was disappointed in what he did last year. He had a couple of nice moments, North Carolina game, maybe the BC game, but he also had a lot of games where he was just kind of invisible. And I was expecting more for him, from him as a, you know, with the opportunity to be the number one wide receiver on that team. And so on the flip side of that, though, there are some things that could be going in his favor. I think, you know, Jordan Travis should be better as a passer. You'd like to hope. He's got better receivers around him, maybe guys that could take some attention from the defense. And then also, you know, the offensive line should be better, so maybe the quarterback will have more time for plays to develop. So for those reasons, I think he could surprise us and make us regret having him where we have him. Maybe he should be even in the top 15, top 10. But, you know, last year I thought it was pretty disappointing overall. I don't know what your thought was.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was going to be the number one wide receiver. Which in any offense, yeah, man, you should be an impactful player in 2021 and playing college football. But it just never seemed to really sort of click, sadly enough. And I think maybe, you know, this fifth year, maybe having some pressure off of him with a guy like Micah Pittman, possibly opposite him, or at least maybe taking more of the looks on the, in the slot, will just allow him to maybe kind of grow a little bit more. So, I don't know. I believe in Pokey. I just believe in him, man.
Where'd you have him?
I had him at 15.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, that's probably about where he belongs. I just, you know, with the infusion of talent at that position, I slid him a little bit lower, but I, you know, I've always liked him. I think, you know, like you said, he's one of those guys that's invested the time. He stayed here. He could have left like a bunch of other guys have left over the last few years. And with all the changes and he stuck it out, you'd like to see it rewarded.
All right, I'm going to start making you defend some of these picks vigorously then, Ira. Let's jump up then to 15 to 20, which is the most recent installment that will be featured over on warchant.com. Cam McDonald, you have at 17. I had Cam McDonald at 31. I guess this is me talking out of both sides of my mouth, because both him and Pokey have, you know, they are who they are at this point in their careers. I think maybe there's some hope for Pokey is having some more supporting help, maybe working him in different positions, whether it's split end or working him into the slot. Maybe there's some sort of solutions there for him. But with Cam, it just feels like we all believe in his athletic ability, and we thought he'd be a matchup sort of nightmare for opposing teams of his size. And it just hasn't been the case. So I don't know where it would come in this sort of year, where he would find success that he hadn't found previously. What makes you believe in Cam this time around?
You know, I just think that I don't know that he's going to have much bigger numbers, but I also think, like, I feel like we judge tight ends at a really high level because we see some elite tight ends. Like, you see what Nick O'Leary did, and so you feel like, okay, that's the standard. Well, man, I don't know. How many Florida State tight ends have been anywhere near that? Yeah. So, you know, he's a guy that's been catching 25, 27 passes, and, you know, they're decent numbers, but certainly not star numbers. And I don't know what I can't put my finger on what the issues are. You know, I think he's got better as a blocker, certainly as a pass blocker. I don't think he's doing a whole lot in run blocking, my guess. But he's just been like kind of a nice player. And like you said, I think part of it also is like you see his body type and you assume, okay, he should be just dusting linebackers.
Yes, yes.
And that's just not happening. So I guess that's what it is. I think he's a little bit of a victim of what he looks like he should be and what we're hoping he should be. But it's not like he's bad. I mean, he's been a solid tight end. I mean, I think he might've led them in receptions last year. So it's not like he's invisible, but he has certainly not been a game breaker.
Yeah. All right. And then, going back and looking at your list, you have him at 17, 18. You have Winston Wright. What do you know that you're not telling us, Ira? Is he going to be ready week one? What's going on? Tell all of us.
I don't know about week one, but I think I just keep hearing more encouraging things. And I was one of the doubters. I saw him, you know, probably 2 months after the accident, and he was on crutches and not even on crutches. Sometimes guys are on crutches, but he was on crutches like where he's not putting an ounce of pressure on. And I'm like, well, this is 2 or 3 months later. But apparently, you know, that was part of the process. And once that healed, it's not like a knee ligament or something like that. It's, you know, we don't have the medical records and Mike Norvell is certainly not going to tell us, but you know, it sounds like it was more bone and structure than a ligament or something like that. And you know, for, you know, if it's a bone, you know, a broken bone, something along those lines, sometimes those things heal pretty quickly. So apparently his rehab is going great. And I just think even if he gets back in week three or week four, he still could end up leading this team in receptions. I know we all like Micah Pittman in the spring, for no question. I was impressed by him. I thought he was their best receiver in the spring. But also, he's played two or three years of college football and hasn't been anywhere near as productive as Winston Wright. So I think if Winston Wright gets back in the first month of the season, which I think he will, then I think he may still end up leading him in receptions.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I think with Micah, we're thinking maybe he didn't have as good a quarterback play as Winston Wright had, but that might be a bit of a stretch. That's a really good point, Ira.
Thanks.
I put him on my list. I put him towards the bottom of my list. I'm like, I have to have him on here because even if he shows up for four games, I just feel like he'll make an impact in those four games. So let's hope that it's well more than that and would make your pick of 18 probably a little bit more in line, if not a little bit even more bullish than that. You're in the Trey Benson business. You got him at 16, but Kevin Knowles at 15. I like that pick. I have him at 14. And then, you know, we're going to speak to Tom Lang later on in the show here, and he talks a little bit about Azaria Thomas and how maybe Kevin Knowles is a bit of a forerunner to what he values Azaria as. Do we think Kevin Knowles is just like you? Are we just going to leave him at slot? He did so well as a freshman. Like, why ruin a good thing? Or if for some reason, you know, Renardo Green slips up, we can flex him out, you know, put him on an island. That's why I like Kevin Knowles. I think Kevin Knowles could probably grow into that number two cornerback spot at some point.
I definitely think the potential's there. I don't, Adam Fuller hasn't gone into great detail with us about how they decide whether or not he needs to be a corner or it needs to stay inside as a slot corner or if he can move outside to the outside corner. But, you know, just we haven't seen him do it a whole lot. So that makes me think that it's one of two things. Either they don't know that he can do it, or they maybe have doubts that he can do it, or they don't have anybody else they feel good about as that slot corner. And so, you know, maybe that's the deal. Maybe it's just he's so much better at that than anybody else, so that's why they're going to keep him there. But, you know, I didn't see any signs in the spring that they're going to move him outside. I think he's super, very, not only a talented player, but also like a real hard worker, very good competitor. And, you know, I think he's definitely one of their best DBs, definitely needs to be in the starting lineup. But I don't know if he's going to win. I don't know it doesn't feel like they're going to move him outside this year. And if they don't do it after 2 years, you know, when will they do it? But definitely a really nice college football player.
All right. Just again, 15 to 20 will be featured. When are we going to have that up? I know Tom's working on the video for that. Ira, when do you hope to have the list and the video released to the masses?
I think today, man, but I've been we're cranking out so much Link Jarrett copy.
Right, yeah.
That might push us back a little bit, but no, I think it'll definitely be today. It just may not be by the time this podcast drops.
Okay, so Ira's got Kevin Knowles at 15, Trey Benson 16, Cam McDonald 17, Winston Wright 18, Derek McClendon 19. Corey also has Derek McClendon at 19. I have Derek McClendon at 21. Gene has Derek McClendon at 20, so great minds on that one. And then Bless Harris at 20, which I think I got Bless. I got Bless way up on my list. We'll see how that one works out. So be on the lookout for that dropping. Again, it'll be Ira, Jeff, Gene, and Tom talking about their 15 to 20. Tom will join us later in the program to talk about 20 to 25 because I don't know where we were on the list. So sorry about that, Tom. I'm the worst.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, let's talk about Link Jarrett real quick. You were out there on Monday covering the event and the announcement of it, Ira. We can talk about, you know, how good of a fit it is and things like that. But what I kind of want to ask you is, and this feels like one of the more, I don't know if marquee is the right word, but this hire just feels a little bit different than what I've experienced since being a part of the team here since 2018. Just in terms of, I don't know, just the way his conviction, when I was speaking with Tom, is sort of his conviction and just the clarity of his message. And I don't know, maybe it's part of him just being at another Power 5 program and proving it. But this hire just felt a little bit different. And I don't know if it kind of marks a new direction for Florida State Athletics going and getting a guy like this, or how much of it is just the fact that, hey, man, he's a hometown guy. Wife is from here. Why not come back home? It just makes sense. Is it more of a homecoming thing, or do you think this is kind of an indication of just how, you know, serious, for lack of a better term, Michael Lall from this athletic department is now when it comes to hiring the right guys and ladies?
I think it's probably some of both. I mean, it definitely is. I mean, there's no denying that it's a huge accomplishment for Michael Alford and this administration, because, you know, because of the way things went 3 years ago, and my understanding of that whole situation was, which you asked him about at the press conference, and I thought he gave a great answer. Mm-hmm. It was a little uncomfortable of a question.
That's what I do, Ira. I got to stay on brand.
I thought he gave a great answer. You know, when that process at that time, my understanding of the situation was that he wasn't going to apply because he thought it was going to be Mike Martin Jr.'s job. And from what I understand, I don't even know if he did formally 100% apply the way you normally apply for a job. I think his approach at the time was probably more like, if you guys want me, I will show interest and I will pursue that job because I'd love to have that job. He was at UNC Greensboro, right. But don't make me do this and then just go hire Mike Martin Jr., which I would understand because Mike Martin Jr. has been there 20 years and it's his dad's son. I understand that that's what you guys might want to do. And then they ended up, from what I understand, there was some pursuit and he was part of the process, but then officially or unofficially, and then they still hired Mike Martin Jr. And I think that there were some feelings around the program and in the baseball community that, man, that may have been their last chance to get Link Jarrett, because you kind of don't do that to somebody that's, you know, show him the respect. He was an All-American here. You know, he coached here. He's been part of the program, the family for a long time. You know, don't make him go through those hoops if you're just going to hire Mike Martin Jr. And that's basically what they did. So there was a feeling that Florida State couldn't get involved. And then even if they could, the way things have gone these last 3 years with him being the National Coach of the Year and what they did this year at Notre Dame, that Florida State may not be able to pay to bring in Link Jarrett. And so for those situations to kind of get rectified and for Florida State to actually make this big hire, I think it's a huge sign for their commitment to baseball. But also, you know, watching him at the press conference, and I know everybody I've talked to today, you know, everybody, you know, gets excited at press conferences. You know, no matter who you hire, people get excited. But I mean, I've had calls from people who worked at FSU 10 years ago. I've had calls from people who played with him that, you know, just how impressed everybody is, not just with the information he presented, but the way he presented it. It just felt like, a new confident era of Florida State baseball. It's hard, you know, you never know how these things are going to play out, but man, I could not have been more impressed by him today.
I think David Coburn has moved up to the top of my I want to have a beer with list. He was there Monday. Our guy, man. I mean, just, you know, looking at the contract, I guess you could say it's fair. I mean, you just hired the National Coach of the Year. But when I looked at the numbers that you were able to get on Friday, Ira, I thought that I think Florida State got a bargain with it. I mean, your understanding of maybe what Link wanted or what was out there and judging what Mike Martin Jr. was making. I mean, where does this sort of a deal fall within, you thinking whether it's a bargain or is it on market, or did they overpay him? I mean, there's no way anybody can think they overpaid him, right? I mean, I think they underpaid him, but hey, I, you know, good job, Michael Offer. Way to be. Way to be.
Mike Martin Jr. might think they overpaid him, but that's about it. No, I think you're right. I think they did get a bargain. I think there was a little bit of hometown discount. He did want to be here. And from my understanding, not only did Clemson come to him with more money, but I was told another SEC program that's a very prominent program in the SEC in college baseball expressed interest as well and was told that he was more interested in Florida State. And I'm sure they would have paid a lot more to get him. So he gave Florida State a hometown discount. But on the flip side, I think they showed their commitment by also giving a 7-year contract. And so to me, and I think to some degree, it's kind of like, you know, with Mike Norvell to some degree, you know, where it's a lower salary, but we're just going to give you a lot of years. Didn't Norvell get 6 years?
Yeah.
And so, that was one of my takes though, Ira, but I think Willie got 6 years too.
I think Willie got five. Okay. And so it's all relative. It's crazy numbers, but I do think that that's kind of how they, I mean, Link got 7 years. I don't know how many 7-year contracts. I think Lonnie Alameda has one, but she's won national titles here. So I don't know how many 7-year contracts. That might be the second one they've ever given to anybody. So I think that when you look at the total dollars, you know, a 7-year deal averaging at, you know, 900 a year or so might be worth overall, you know, more dollars than, you know, maybe a 5-year deal at 1.3 or something. So, I think that's what they did, but yeah, no question. I mean, he could have made more money if he went somewhere else. And, you know, I think it everything lined up perfectly. He wants to be here, not just because he played at FSU, and because he's from here, but his parents are elderly and he really wants to be there. I think for his parents, you know, in their later years.
I'm looking at this, the guy from Tennessee who he knocked out was the number one seed, Tony Vitello. He signed a 4-year extension in July of last year that would take him to 2026. Jim Schlossnagel, who A&M took away from TCU, he signed a 7-year deal. So, he's in line with the guy that was one of the more surprising hires and pulls in Jim Schlossnagel. So how realistic do we think it is for Hauser to get some, I don't know, improvements done? I know Austin Cox worked on a story that's up on warchant.com right now. It's one of the furthest things from my mind, but, you know, I know he was asked about it and we wrote a story about it. Is that something that you've heard? Not a hangup, but that was a concern maybe going into this hiring cycle was, you know, getting Hauser up to par for whoever they're going to hire's expectations.
You know, what I was told was that, you know, it's not like FSU's facilities are so bad that they can't be successful or that they couldn't hire a good coach. But I mean, you've been in these SEC baseball stadiums. It's almost like a different sport. And I don't know that FSU is ever going to get there. You know, they just don't, I don't, you know, if they're ever going to pour that kind of money into it, but it could definitely be a lot better than it is. I mean, underneath the stadium, there are so many, I don't even know how they take recruits on visits sometimes because there are so many parts of underneath the stadium that are just dilapidated and run down and need to be fixed and money needs to be poured into it. And, Michael Alford, when we talked to him about it, he said, you know, that, in his files, you know, his cabinet, when he took over as athletic director, he's got 3 different studies and plans for how to renovate Hauser that were commissioned over the last, you know, whatever it's 10, 15 years, but none of them ever were put into motion. Either they didn't raise the money or the coaching staff changed or whatever it is. And so, you know, now you have a new head coach, a new athletic director. I think there's some excitement about the program and they're smart to really kind of try to cash in right now on the excitement. Look, you know, we went out and we hired the national coach of the year. So now we're going to turn around and we're going to ask you to support us and give us money so that we can improve these facilities. So they're definitely going to get fixed. I think in the short term, Michael Alford said, you know, obviously they're already redoing the field, the playing surface that was already underway. Link Jarrett's not going to have more input into that. But then Michael Alford said that this year, by this next season, the concourses will be renovated to where there's a lot more kind of tributes to the history of the program and, you know, update a lot of the signage and things like that. And but as far as the long-term big ticket things, really, you know, adding one of the things, you know, he wants to do is I think add premium seating, which maybe more club seats down the sidelines. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But there's no doubt that if Link Jarrett signed a 7-year deal, Michael Alford pursued him, I got to think that they've talked about their plans to get things in place within the next, you know, at least 4 or 5 years to bring it up closer to what those other schools are doing.
Last thing, Ira, yes. You know, we spoke to Michael Alford a lot. I mean, you, and when I say we, really you, and I'd tag along and try to record it. There was one story up there on our site that I forgot to hit record on the audio and had to do some magic, everybody, and didn't work out all that great. But anyhow, man, I feel like he's, I don't know if he was ever in a shell, but I feel like he's come out of his shell. And I think maybe he's walking kind of tall right now because of what he was able to do with locking up Lonnie and keeping or getting Link here. Just kind of makes me feel good about sort of the attitude that we have now leading this athletic department, man. I mean, do you see any kind of anything from him here in the last, you know, 4 to 6 months that either has surprised you or has kind of reinforced what you thought about him in the hire?
I don't know if it's surprising because, you know, I was hearing, you know, from people, you know, even in the higher levels of the administration that, you know, okay, we've come through these dark times, you know, and in the dark times, meaning, you know, what they went through, they were already having some financial issues before COVID. Then they went through COVID and the shutdown and all the lost revenue from ticket games, football games being canceled and all that, basketball tournament being canceled. And they kind of weathered that storm and came out of it in pretty good shape. David Coburn deserves respect for that. And now they're at a point where, okay, I think they're looking at the overall landscape. And this is kind of what I was hearing from the administration, looking at the overall landscape of college sports and where things are going. You don't want to be a program that's not investing right now because there's so much money to be made. There's so much shuffling that might be in the future with conferences and all that stuff that I think there's a feeling that, man, we've got to go. We've got to pour money into this, figure out a way to do it. And maybe in some cases, figure out how to pay for it later, you know? I think the days of trying to be responsible financially in terms of like keep a nest egg and, you know, be conservative and all those things, I just feel like there's a feeling from Michael Alford and the people above him that, no, we need to go full speed, get the best coaches we can get, try to get the best programs, best facilities in place we can get so that we can succeed and be there whenever the dust clears in the new landscape of college sports. I really think that's what it's all about. I think they feel like the FSU brand is awesome and the name is great, but if we don't start investing at a high level and trying to, you know, show that we're one of those schools that really cares about sports and will invest in it, then they might get left by the wayside. So I'm not surprised by it. But, man, good for him. You know, I mean, really, because like you said, man, the first couple months on the job for Mark Kerkorian to leave and then Sue Semeraud to retire and even Gene Deckerhoff retired.
Yeah, what's up with that?
He was taking it on the chin left and right. So, but, you know, he went out and got the, you know, the guy from Tennessee to coach soccer and who was an SEC coach of the year. And he extended Lonnie Alameda, locked her up, has extended some other coaches, you know, it just seems like he's really had a nice run here. So he should, you know, he should feel good. He should have his chest out a little bit because this is pretty good. Again, so many people thought Florida State would not get Link Jarrett. This is a big one, man. This is a big hire for him. And you could feel it in that room. When we were texting about it with Corey, you know, 3 years ago when Mike Martin Jr. was introduced, they did it like in a classroom kind of at the Moore Center. And there was like 20, 30, 40 people crammed in there. This was like that's where they hired Mike Norvell. I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, Ira? Usually you have
my one last thing.
Your one last thing. One big thing like SVP.
No, man, just thanks for having me and looking forward to more stories from Corey in Chicago. I feel like you need to have a segment of Corey in Chicago. His antics. Yeah, exactly.
All right, we'll see if we can work on it. He'll be back for a Friday program, everybody. We'll have him on here Thursday for Friday's program. So, Ira, you're the best, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Take care.
It's Tuesday. Let's bring Tom back, everybody. Tom Lang, Director of Original Content for Florida State. What the fuck, Florida State, what am I talking about? War Champ. I wish I could stop and start these things, but you have to get a new link. And it just makes
yeah, no, it's all good.
3, 2. It's Tuesday. Let's bring Tom in. That's Tom Lang, director of original content for WarChant.com, as well as executive producer for the Jeff Cameron Show, which you can hear on our YouTube page, WarChant TV, 1 to 3 o'clock live, as well as on 93.3 FM in Tallahassee. We got a holiday weekend coming up, Tom. So thanks for chipping in here as Corey's in the Windy City, my friend. Sorry about the Bolts, man. I thought they were going to make it back in seven, but we don't have to talk too much about it.
No, I thought so too, but it's okay. There are some teams when their season ends, you feel bitterly disappointed or you're almost happy that their season ends. Maybe that happened with a Florida State program near us, near and dear, that we'll talk about in just a moment. But for this one, just it's hats off. It was going to end with an ovation either way. So good for them.
Right on, right on. All right, man, I think like passes the eye test. There's so many like cliches that I use too much and I want to steer away from, but like winning the press conference. Since I've been here, since I've been working with War Chant, everybody's won the press conference, man. I liked Meat's press conference. I liked Mike Norvell's press conference. The month before I got here, I liked Willie Taggart's press conference. Something about Link's press conference, though, to me, I don't know, man. Walk me through how you felt listening to his comments, as much of it as you possibly could, as you're getting ready to do the Jeff Cameron show. But I sense a sort of confidence, a sort of, I don't want to say maturity, but just a conviction from him that I haven't felt from some of the other press conferences I've heard. And indeed, I thought he won the press conference. I feel real good about the direction and his vision.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of the principal differences for this hire is if you compare it to, say, Mike Norvell's press conference, you know, he's coming up a step. Even though Florida State was in a bad way, you're graduating from a Group of Five team that, yeah, you took to a New Year's Six Bowl, but it's a different animal to be the head coach of Florida State than it is Memphis. You know, this is a proven coach who won in places that they hadn't won and won in ways that a program like Notre Dame has never won. So he knows. It's almost like somebody who is really prepared for the test, showing up on test day. You see the confidence. They've studied. They've done all the homework. They paid attention in lectures. They know exactly what they're about. They know exactly what they're about to do. And, you know, I'll defer to you on the feeling in the room, but I can tell you within probably 60 seconds of watching his opening remarks, I thought, oh, so this isn't going to be like all palling around kind of a thing. This is almost like an intense sermon or something along those lines. It felt very different. You've got to be who you are in an opening press conference, in any press conference, really. So I'm glad he's sticking to who he is and not trying to go outside of his personality. But it was gripping in a way because of the intensity. I mean, it felt like a midseason press conference after a two-game losing streak or something. But you can speak to it better, Aslan. I'm curious to hear how the room felt as he was going through not only his remarks, but in the Q&A session.
I mean, everybody was hanging on to every word. I mean, you could feel it. Like, it was palpable. Like, you know, there was, you know, he would talk about certain things like in a serious manner, just kind of about all the things he had to go through as a Notre Dame baseball coach. And like the crowd was just like in shock about it. Like they were like almost like laughing to kind of like help loosen him up a little bit, but he was totally fine. Like he wasn't uptight about anything, but like everybody just kind of like rooting for him in all of his comments, either like, you know, give him a good laugh or just like applaud. They were just, anytime there was like a pause where they could maybe get a clap or two and they would try to, it just, you could sense that so many people in there, like were just sold out for that, for this hire, man. And, you know, we text about on one of the group texts that, you know, I mean, like, they brought Meat into the museum. I mean, the museum's right, like the size of my house, you know, like 1,000 square foot place, which is larger than the Midtown offices. But then, you know, they bring him into the Champions Club. There's, you know, ex players, there's boosters who were his teammates that were in there. I mean, it definitely had a feel of, you know, like he said, I think the circle has been complete, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the key things, and you put this in the group text that we have at work too, is who was there from the roster, you know, not only the current players, but the next class. And you remarked on some pretty big names that were in attendance. That unified front feeling is huge when you're talking about what can Link Jarrett immediately do taking over in Tallahassee. I mean, I'm sure you've mentioned it before, but if you want to go through some of those names again, key players that I think if you were dialed in FSU baseball circles, you were wondering if they were coming back next year, not because of pro aspirations, just because they wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. There's some big names that were in that building.
Well, Tom, like that's the thing. I was looking to my left, and then to my right, there was even more players. Yep. I think I saw White Crawl on the right to me, but in the end, in the group chat, I was like, man, Jaime Ferrer, check, he's here. James Tibbs, he's here, check. Jordan Carrion, he is here, check. So, I mean, I don't know, probably top three of your order. I mean, three of your first four guys in your lineup you're figuring. So,
yeah.
And then he said, like, right from the jump, like, I'm going to talk to you guys later. When he said that in the video, he was referring to the players. There was two rows of pretty much, you know, this roster there. So he knows what's kind of cut out for him here. You know, I thought the way he handled the kind of the elephant in the room, the Martin family thing. He couldn't really probably have handled it any better. What was your sort of reaction when you heard him kind of, you know, mention obviously 11, but, you know, also mentioned the fact that he is friends with Mike Martin Jr., has been and will continue to be. That made me feel pretty good. I don't know if I'm just being hokey.
No, I think that's him being quick to punch before anybody decides to make a snide comment about the administration that's leaving. And not necessarily 11, but to a degree by extension, because things were kind of falling apart towards the end of his tenure. But he's basically signaling to anybody who's invested in the program, be it current employees, be it the money people who make the thing go round with the baseball specific boosters, to even media members. If you're going to try and give me a snide remark of what was going on before I got here, I got zero time for it, because this is a friend. This is a roommate. This is a family that have helped mentor me and shape who I am. All of those messages were loud and clear. It's, I'm not here to pile on what went wrong last time. I'm here to fix what's wrong and to do what basically what Link said, do what I am destined to do. Because Ira's question was, could you ever picture yourself? Have you ever pictured yourself taking over Florida State's program? He thought about it and then just delivered a stone cold yes. And that was met, as you're talking about, Aslan, with a round of applause from the room. But this is somebody who clearly believes this is where he was going to end up. Link Jarrett was going to be the head baseball coach at Florida State, and he was going to be the person who led them to a College World Series. Whether or not it was done before he got there, he was going to do it. That's what makes that press conference really kind of almost eerie, beyond the fact that, as you're talking about, he was disarming the whole Mike Martin Jr. and Mike Martin family elephant in the room. Was he just, it almost had an aura of like destiny. This is where I'm supposed to be. It's very strange, but it's also powerful.
Yeah. I know when I asked them about what was different between the sort of process of 3 years ago and this one, and it was like, I was meant to be the head coach at Notre Dame. He's like, I just was. That was part of, you know, that was part of the plan. He's like, and now, like, I'm supposed to be back here, you know, completing the circle. So, you know, I think it just goes back to the whole overall feel of the press conference, which, I mean, like, again, I don't really think you had to be there to feel it and sense it, Tom, but you know, he just, that was not a prepared speech. Like, he probably had some things in mind, but man, he did not rehearse that speech. He had some notes on a piece of paper that he wanted to hit on, but then there was a lot of like pausing, sincere thought. And, you know, he made sure to thank Notre Dame, but I think that's what kind of struck me the most was that, I mean, the way he just kind of delivered and the way he emphasized the way he would punch on some of his points, man, just to me just struck as like, he didn't wake up yesterday and like get in the mirror and like kind of go through it, man. And you know, all right, this is what I want to say. I want to lead to this. It was, mm-hmm. It was very kind of like authentic and from the heart. I think that just kind of bodes well, man. It just, I don't know. It makes me feel good because in this day and age, like coach speaking, everything is, it feels like we got a real dude here. Not that 11 wasn't, but right. Just, you know, it had a different sort of feel than what you would expect.
No, I mean, comparing that to Mike Norvell, I think he very much tried to prepare every word.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to say it. Thank you, Tom. Thank you,
man. That's me. No, it's on me, Mike. Come on.
I'll take over.
But, you know, again, different strokes for different folks. And also that has its own way of flattering the Florida State masses. You just don't want to get it wrong, you know. So there, it's its own level and choice that Norvell made. But, yeah, I mean, what Link Jarrett brings to the table is also some oddly backhanded humor. Like when you asked him about what from your previous experience helped you grow as a coach, and he's talking about having 2 hours on an indoor facility field that he's splitting with softball and the track teams running around them, it makes Notre Dame sound like a third-rate athletic department, which it's not, but for baseball, I guess it is. So when he was listing all of the BS that they had to do, like they had to finish scrimmages in the batting cage, what the hell is that?
How does that work?
I was actually laughing. I'm like, holy crap, that sucks. I can see why you left, sir. I get why you left. Push came to shove. And he even said it on the way out at Notre Dame that they're working on and working to fix those issues. But basically, I think what he's saying is, yeah, I know the facilities here aren't exactly up to SEC level in Tallahassee, but have you seen where I just came from? Man, you wouldn't think twice about this being an upgrade. This is an upgrade. So I found humor in that. I don't know if he intended it that way. And I think that might be the dance we have with Link Jarrett as media members moving forward, is we might laugh when he's not intending for us to laugh. And he'll say something along the lines of, it's not funny. Like that's what I feel is almost going to come down the pike here this next baseball season once or twice.
Last one about Link before we pivot to some football, forcing the football here on Wake Up War Chant. You know, obviously, you know, you can talk about the standard and you're here to do a job. But I just felt the way he talked about, I think at the beginning of his speech, he mentioned, you know, that he mentioned obviously the history of this program. There's one thing they haven't done. And he, you know, explicitly said it's win a championship, and that's what he's here for. And the fact that he kind of closed down his comments with, you know, there's one thing I'm here to do, and we all know what that is. And that was like walk off mic drop. Like, to me, that was not goosebumps, but I'm like, all right, man. I mean, not that Meek got it obviously as well, right, but just the way he delivered that, man, just the conviction in it just made me a believer, man, for real.
Well, that's something in broadcasting too. You know, it's implied that it's your opinion. So state something with conviction. You know, that's the whole thing. Well, if you want to get a room of baseball players aged 18 to 22 to believe in you, that's how you do it right there. Because that's the other thing that's going to have to happen too. We haven't talked about it on the level that we did when Willie Taggart left as the head football coach. Obviously, football is a bigger sport, but you've got culture issues that you've got to repair. You got some problems in that clubhouse. They weren't that bad at base running, you know, on their own. They weren't that bad at the fundamentals of baseball on their own. There are wheels turning in their head that shouldn't be turning. And that has to do with a divide or a culture problem or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the exact definition and prescription is, but it wasn't hunky-dory. So he's got to convince those people to stick around and to buy into him. And his press conference went a long way in doing that, because I play for him after that press conference, and I'm sure a lot of those kids that were sitting in the first two rows felt the same way.
All right, man, let's get to what keeps the electricity on here. Your place, my place, everywhere. Yeah. Warchant.com. The Warchant Top 40, the preseason Top 40. We are now into the Top 20, firmly into it. Jeff, what was it? Jeff, Ira, Gene, and yourself were doing on the 25 to 20. So instead of talking about what the composite is, which you guys can check out over at the website, let's dig into your 25 to 20. And man, I like the way you value some of these guys. So bring me to the light, Tom, is what I'm
going to try.
Oh, bring me to the light on Azaria Thomas at 25. You got Malcolm Ray at 24. Mm-hmm. Briggs at 23. I get if Briggs is healthy, I've got Briggs way undervalued because I'm worried about the injury concerns. But Ja'Kai Douglas as well. Maybe give me some Douglas and Thomas gospel and then sprinkle in some Malcolm Ray too, because I'll take it to Corey, because I think he and I both are undervaluing Malcolm Ray right now.
So the gospel of Thomas is apocryphal if I am correct in how it's viewed. Anyway, Azaria Thomas, I'd say the precedent of last year is what has me so hopeful for AZ Thomas. You have two true freshmen, one that was an early enrollee and one that wasn't, that by the end of the season were making big plays for this defense. Amarian Cooper, by the end of the year, was your best cover corner. And I remember when he had the pick, I believe it was up at Clemson. I'm like, who the hell is that? And by the end of the year, I was like, oh my God, you know, this is what a revelation it is to have Amarian Cooper, Duke Cooper out there versus what was going on for the first 6 to 7 games of the season. And Kevin Knowles had it on lockdown in the slot. So to me, that's precedent that the development is where it needs to be with his coaching staff, and so is the opportunity. I mean, there is one job open at corner, and AZ Thomas looks the part. I'm handicapping it, Aslan, that he's not going to make an immediate impact, but when he does, it's going to be a significant impact. If I thought he was going to be an immediate impact player, I'd probably have him inside the top 20, firmly inside the top 20, but I think there's going to be a learning curve for Thomas, and at some point, maybe towards the middle of the season, he's going to get more live reps. And when he does, I mean, it's just everything about the way he plays is so smooth. And then for Ja'Kai, this one was
easy. Real quick, Tom, sure. Sorry to interrupt you, man. But yeah, to that point then, like if we did a post 2021 top 40, like where would Amarian Cooper be? I'm not saying that you're saying he's going to have that kind of performance, but like if we would not have had Amarian Cooper on our top preseason top 40, but the way he played, again, and maybe half of the season, if Azaria Thomas can develop in one half of the season towards the end of it, yeah, that would definitely be somebody that's like a top 20. I mean, he played like a top 20 level last year, wouldn't you say, Cooper?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think by definition, like it's hard though, because you have to weight the amount of participation against the level of play. Like, so if he's only playing a quarter of the season, but it's really good, is it still more valuable than what Brownlee brought to the table? Like, I don't know. It would be hard to fit him in the list that way and put him squarely above a player like Brownlee, who was, you know, a rotation piece and a starter for the entirety of the season, but he would have been in the top 40 and he wouldn't have been around 38. I can promise you that, especially if it was, you know, based upon final impressions. I mean, he'd be way up that list. But yeah, I think that's the thing here is I'm hedging, admittedly, with AZ Thomas, that I think if he's going to be in that 25 range, it's because he's not going to play a full year and start a full year on defense, but we'll see. he's just got that knack to him. I look forward to seeing if he can be consistent in fall camp, because there might be a dip in performance. Who knows? So you got to give him time, though. He's a true freshman.
All right. And then Ja'Kai, I guess, you know, Keyshawn Helton, we're thinking he's probably going to fall behind Ja'Kai, because I think most of us, I didn't even have Keyshawn on my top 40. We just see that Ja'Kai creates problems in the slot. I mean, did against Notre Dame, did against Miami, maybe the two more stingy defense on the schedule last year.
Yeah, again, I didn't have Keyshawn on the list either. They've got a numbers problem there now, which is a good thing for Noel fans to say, hey, you've got too many, you know, potential players and solutions at receiver. That's something that we haven't talked about in quite some time. For Ja'Kai, I don't know that it's going to be about consistency of production. I think it's just the quality of the production. And I know you guys talked about it in your video, but that I had him way up there compared to most everybody else. I just think when he touches the ball, it's going to be a game-changing play more often than some of his segment mates at receiver. So I don't even know if he's going to finish top three in targets, catches, or yards. But I think when he makes the plays, they're going to be those game-breaking type moments like he had against Notre Dame and Miami. So that's why he makes it in that top 25. For me, it's not that he's going to be a consistent playmaker for FSU. The other part I'd say about him is, at least to this point in their careers, Jordan Travis and Ja'Kai Douglas have a little bit of extra chemistry to him. I don't know that Jordan has a rapport with Micah Pittman or Johnny Wilson the way he does with Ja'Kai Douglas. Does that mean that he deserves more reps than those other guys? No. But if there's a big play that needs to be made, I know that 13 has a ton of faith in Ja'Kai Douglas, so that's why he makes it in the top 25.
Well said. All right, so then you got 25, Azaria Thomas, 24, Malcolm Ray, 23, Briggs, 22, Ja'Kai, 21, Caden Lyles, and then 20, Darius Washington. I think, actually, no, Gene's got Darius kind of high up there as well. I was hoping that the spring injury wasn't all that major and he'll be good to go once fall camp arrives and we kind of lean on his athleticism and veteran, you know, sort of status.
Yeah, I think the hard part is just figuring out, like, you've got an idea of probably who your top three offensive linemen are, and certainly your top two. From there, I don't know. It's kind of anybody's guess, and I'm just banking on the versatility of Darius Washington playing at some point. Attrition being what it is, even if he's not a starter in week one or week two against LSU, I think Darius is going to play a big role for this team because somebody's going to go down in the course of a game. Somebody's going to go down for a week or two at a time, and Darius is going to have to play right guard, or he's going to have to play right tackle, whatever it is. And I know that they like him at center too. I haven't seen a whole lot of that myself. But I think the versatility is going to see him injected in the lineup at times when things are going wrong. If he wins a starting job, I'll apologize. I should have had him higher. But I don't know that he is the first guy to play interior. And I feel like Bless Harris right now is a better right tackle than Darius Washington, but you need players who can be versatile and step in and play multiple positions in the course of a 12-game season. And that's where I think his value is that he'll be one of the first guys off the bench if he isn't an outright starter.
I think we forget that Georgia Tech game in 20, they were actually driving. They probably had their best drive in the second half in the fourth quarter and forgot who went down. It might have been Devontae Love Taylor, but I think either Brady Scott or DeBavion had to come in, and on the first snap they got flagged for like a false start. So, I mean, you think about if Darius Washington were not to win out the job and Bless Harris does, and Bless Harris goes down with a cramp and Darius Washington comes in, just and how much better of a place you are. That makes you pretty confident, pretty hopeful and optimistic about what the season can be. So we'll see how it goes.
I'd say, they're very similar players, Washington and Harris, at least at right tackle, from what I could tell in spring. Now we'll see. The other thing I'm interested in, Aslan, to see in fall camp with Darius is, do they do anything different with his body, and does that suggest where they want to play him? Because, tackles aren't necessarily going to be looking like a left guard or a center. You want to be a little bit more beefy if you're in the middle. You want to be a little bit longer and leaner if you want to play on the perimeter. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing in Dennis Briggs on the defensive line as well, is I know they want to play him at end, but his body's got to match the position that they're trying to get him to play. I do want to see with Darius Washington if they put him in a position to suggest that they want him to play interior only, or if he's just going to continue to be a tweener. Either way, you need some Swiss Army knives to get where you want to go, Aslan, and 8 wins is that benchmark. That's at least where you want to clear. If they do get there, I'll bet Darius is a big part of it.
Absolutely. Headlines later today on Tuesday?
Yes. Yeah, I'll be sitting in for Corey. While Corey's enjoying Chicago pizza, I'll be enjoying Mr. Schofield and Mr. Cameron's company.
There we go. Right on. Tom Lang, executive producer of the Jeff Cameron Show and director of original content for warchant.com. Tom, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Always a good time, Aslan.
And there we go, everybody. That is a wrap. Thank you to Tom. Thank you to Ira. Thank you to you folks. Thank you to Corey. Just, because Corey's aura, his spirit, always lives within us whenever we hit record and put the show out to all of you. So we'll have one more show this week, most likely, maybe two. We'll see how it goes, but we'll definitely have a Friday show. It will be a Renegade Express with Corey's triumphant return from Midwest. So be on the lookout for that. And in the meantime, again, headlines drops today, 1 to 3 o'clock, Ira, Jeff, and Tom on that one. And warchant.com's got you covered. I think we got some recruiting stuff going on, 2:30 announcement. So be with us here on the website, podcasts, YouTube, all of that sort of stuff. Thumbs up, 5-star rating and review on your way out, everybody. Thank you again to everybody for helping out with the show today. This has been Wake Up War Chant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.